Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 409 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as always, by... he's a former heavyweight world title challenger. He's my right-hand man. It is, of course, the main man, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
Oh, I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Can you believe it? It is the truth. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here last Friday, August 11th, at the Overtime Elite Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, USA. This one was on DAZN. One fight to mention on the undercard, son of former world champion Raul Marquez, friend of the show. His son Giovanni Marquez, now 6-0, a TKO for him in round two against Nicky Vitone, who's now 9-3 with a draw. Albert Bell as well, friend of the show, now 24-0, a rare knockout win actually. His opponent retired on his stool after five rounds, didn't come out for round six. The opponent, Presco Carcosia, now 11-3 with a draw. All the best there to Albert Bell. Moving now to the big one though, it went down at the O2 Arena in Greenwich, London, United Kingdom. Let's start with the undercard. Win for Maisie Rose Courtney, a points win. Very easy to predict this because she got in there with very, very teak tough Gemma Rueg, who's now 7-8. She's now gone into negative in terms of the losses and wins. But yeah, Maisie Rose Courtney, good little win there over 6-2s, now 4-0. Good learning fight. Campbell Hatton also on the card, moved to 13-0, a points win over 8 rounds there against Tom Ansell, who's now 10-5. Campbell Hatton, I said on last week's show, really unsure if he's going to get the knockout or get the points win. I just wasn't sure. I knew he'd win the fight, obviously, but wasn't too sure how he'd do it. He had too much in the end for Tom Ansell. It was a little bit of a step up, really, actually, for Campbell Hatton. Again, a lot of people, you know, annoyed with the slow progression of the guy, but I'm not one of those guys, you know. All the best to him. Who cares, man? Johnny Fisher on the card as well. I did say we're going to see some rounds here, and I'd be very surprised if Johnny Fisher walked straight through Harry Armstrong. Got that one right. He got the TKO in round seven. Good knockout in the end. Yeah, he's now 10-0, big Johnny Fisher. Bosh, you have to say, when he gets a win. Harry Armstrong now 5-2 with a draw. It's the first time he's been stopped. It was for the vacant Southern Area heavyweight title. Armstrong down in the first round. And Johnny Fisher did what he likes to do when he's got you hurt. He goes, you know, he completely goes for it. Tried to get the stoppage. And yeah, unfortunately for him, wasn't able to get it. And then I think kind of blew his load a little bit in the first round. And it took him a few rounds, I think, to kind of get a bit of a second wind, if you like. You know, he certainly, you know, put it all out in round one. And yeah, the corner threw the towel in round seven. Derek Chisora against Gerald Washington. We had Gerald on a couple of weeks ago, obviously, friend of the show. I wanted him to win. And to be totally honest with you, I think he did win. I wasn't strictly scoring it round by round, but yeah, Derek Chisora now 34-13, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds. Chisora cut as well, head clash in round two. Gerald Washington now 20-6 with a draw. Obviously, all five of Gerald Washington's losses had come by knockout. This is the first time he's lost a fight on points, and like I say, very controversial. Round one, the uppercut, I think, was working well for both men. Round two, obviously, that's where I mentioned the head clash, Chisora cut. And then Chisora went down with the last shot of the round, and it was ruled by the commentator a push. There was no replay at all of the punch that dropped Chisora. No replay at all in between rounds. To me, live, it looked like a knockout. I have spoke to Gerald after the fight. He said 100% it was a knockout and should have counted. And I don't know what that was about there. Very, very dodgy from the officials and whoever's in charge of the replays in between rounds. Round three, you know, Chisora again looked awful for me. Flat-footed, slow. He was throwing shots from miles out. Wild shots, like almost like a drunk man in a bar. Washington was doing the cleaner of the work, winning the fight for me. But I knew that Washington in previous fights has had a really bad gas tank, and if he's anything like his old self, then, you know, he's probably going to fold, unfortunately. Round four, Chisora gone from a big favourite in play to a big underdog. And 41-year-old Gerald Washington coming off 18 months out of the ring was making him look awful. Round five was a better round for Chisora. I jumped on the in-play Chisora KO at almost 3-1 because I thought Gerald might, you know, revert back to his old self and run out of gas and all the rest of it. He was starting to look dog tired at the end of that round as well. So I felt like I did quite a smart move putting that little bet on there. I didn't think it was going to be going 10 rounds. Gerald was looking, like I say, a little bit like his old self, gassing out after four or five rounds. Round six, Chisora was putting it on Gerald a little bit. He'd gone back to being the betting favourite in play, which was mad, the amount of momentum swings. And that's about where I stopped kind of taking my notes. I felt like it was a really awful, awful fight. It was really boring. And what a bore fest as well to lead you into an Anthony Joshua fight. I think off the back of that, Chisora needs to retire. Again, I think he lost the fight despite not really scoring it. When I went on social media, a hell of a lot of people pretty much saying the same stuff, that Gerald Washington won the fight. But yeah, Chisora, I would have liked to just got that win there and then sailed away in the sunset. But he has come out and said he will continue to box, which, you know, I just don't see the point in. But anyway, that was my take of it. Eddie, I know you did get to see maybe the majority of that fight. Let me know.
Yeah, it was, it's hard to say I was watching it, but we were walking and doing some things. I actually had it on the phone, and I was watching a good bit of it, and then Gerald looked like at early, you know, he looked pretty decent with the jab and, you know, being at range, and Chisora falling in, looking for big, heavy haymaker shots that sometimes looked a little bad, him throwing, and I wasn't able to really get too much of a beat on really what was going on too much, because I didn't sit down till, you know, toward the end and actually start paying attention to what happened like the last couple of rounds. But it really wasn't, like, I agree, it wasn't a great looking fight. Chisora didn't look that great. I mean, you know, Washington, you know, was, he didn't look super duper good. I mean, he was doing some good things at times, but they didn't really look good either, to be quite honest. But Gerald did look to be the fresher of the two early on, obviously, until he started to blow like he always does. But at 41, he didn't look terrible or too bad at 41 to be in there. But it's just, you know, if it's like the loser's bracket, you know, that fight was. It wasn't really a fight that of anybody that I really think is going to be really a serious threat to a heavyweight championship. They could probably maybe take another fight and make some money, but I don't think either one of those guys at this point in their careers are, you know, going to be knocking on the door of a heavyweight championship. So, you know, unfortunately for Gerald Washington, even if, you know, like you thought he might have won, I'm not 100% sure. It's just unfortunate. I mean, I can't remember what the scorecards were, but I thought weren't they a little wide in spots, if I'm not mistaken? Like, you know, one of them had it a little wide, or was it all like pretty close? I can't remember the scorecards 100%. What was the scorecards, Joe?
96-94,
97-94, 98-93. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That, to me, it seemed a little wide. They were all for Chisora, right?
Yeah, unanimous.
Yeah, I think they were a little wide. I think the fight was a little closer. It was definitely closer than that. If he was going to give it to Chisora, maybe you don't argue so much, you know, giving it to him. But I think those cards are a little wide. But like I said, you know, I'm pretty sure I don't know what the general consensus is with everybody who was watching it. But, you know, probably stop caring. You know what I mean? The fight wasn't that entertaining, nor do either guy at this point in their careers have a shot at winning a title. I mean, don't get me wrong, and, you know, stranger things have happened, but it's just, you know, I doubt it. So, but all in all, I guess, you know, they did what they could do up to the point. I can't say it was a great fight, but at least they got in there. They put forth the best effort that they have at this point. But hopefully Chisora looks better the next time out. He got the win. And, you know, that's, you know, on to better things. You know, I'm hoping for him, but it just seems like it should be the end soon. Who am I to judge?
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I felt that Gerald nicked it, but it is what it is. Filip Hrgović on the card as well, now 16-0, a TKO in the 12th and final round against the previously undefeated Dempsey McKean. Now 22-1, McKean counted in the 12th prior to the stoppage. I think the towel came in. I remember watching this entire fight, but I can't remember much of it now looking back. I know, obviously, Hrgović got to him in the end. I think Hrgović started the fight quite well. And McKean, I think, as the fight went on, started to get very, very tired, if I'm not mistaken. And it got to a point where his defence was kind of leaky at that point. And, yeah, Hrgović managed to sort of come on strong late on. And, yeah, but it still wasn't, I don't think, that impressive from Hrgović. Although, you know, I did think McKean had a bit of a chance, but... Yeah, I don't think McKean was maybe as good as I not thought he was, but maybe I don't think he was as good as I expected he could be, maybe. So yeah, moving on to the main event, Anthony Joshua now 26-3, a knockout in round 7 against Robert Hellenius, now 32-5. Hellenius KO'd with a nice right hand in the end. But yeah, getting through those rounds the way I saw it. Obviously, the first round was a bit of a feel-out round. Both guys were a little bit hesitant, and that was understandable. Round two, Joshua round on the front foot throughout the round, beginning to close the gap a little bit. Still, no one had landed anything of serious note by that point. Through the next few rounds, Joshua, I felt, was just kind of nicking the rounds, but they were competitive. You know, there wasn't that much in them. Both guys were just opting to mainly jab. And yeah, that shot, like I say, to finish things was a perfect right hand from Joshua. He doesn't get that many one-punch knockouts, but yeah, they don't get much better than that. And I think shortlist for KO of the year. But still, Eddie, once again... This extends that streak that I keep talking about not getting a knockout in the first half of a fight. In December, it will be 7 years since the last time Anthony Joshua got someone out within 6 rounds. And that, for me, is absolutely insane. But yeah, like I say, there's a few things to pick at. The fight itself, like I say, I've kind of given my thoughts on it. I think, you know, it was like a lose-lose scenario for Anthony Joshua, because if you bang him out, you know, within a round, then, oh, well, he only had a few days' notice, he's you know, he's old and all the rest of it. And if you struggle with him a little bit like Joshua did, his whole face was busted up. I think he was bleeding on both eyes, his nose was all bloody. If you struggle with him, then, well, you know, you're not that good and you're shot. So, yeah, it was a bit of a lose-lose scenario, and I felt for him because we were outlining, obviously, on last week's show, the complete opposite style that Hellenius had to Dillian White, the opposite size, everything. Like, it was a completely, completely different fighter. I know, obviously, Joshua's been doing a lot of sparring with Michael Hunter in the build-up for this fight against Dillian White. So, you know, Hunter's, what, 6'2", something like that, I'd say. So, yeah, you know, 6'2", 6'3", maybe. So that's a small guy. Again, he's been sparring mainly with him, if I'm not mistaken. And then he gets in there with, you know, Hellenius, 6'7" and a bit. So, yeah, I felt for Joshua in some ways. And I really thought, once again, it's going to go into the second half of the fight. And that is what happened. Round 7 seems to be his favourite round to get people out of there in, from recent memory. If I can think of, if I'm right, I believe he's got a few people out in round 7. But anyway, back to what I'm saying, Eddie. Lose-lose scenario, I think, for Joshua. And yeah, just what did you make of it in the end?
Yeah, it was kind of. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, he had not a lot to gain, but a whole lot to lose. And I do agree with that. It's a lose-lose for him. But, I mean, at the end of the day, he was expected to win. If you stop him early, still what? You know, people are going to, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So do your best to get him out of there when you can. But at the same time, I certain parts of it, I kind of liked what I seen, certain things. I mean, you know, like most people are looking at him, well, you're fighting a guy who got knocked out by Wilder in a round. If we were looking to make a fight with you and Wilder, you got to make a pretty serious statement here. Then to look at him, like you said, bleeding, he took punishment a little bit in there. I'm not saying he got beat up, but he took some punishment in there. You know what I mean? And Helene is a big guy who could punch. So, you know, that's why he was bleeding. And I'm pretty sure, you know, if he would have got a good enough shot on him, he could have hurt him. So, but yeah, it's like you're Anthony Joshua. This is Robert Helenius, who's old, who wasn't a necessarily a, I mean, the title challenger, I guess, at the height of his career. I mean, he, you know, it, recent history, he's upset the apple cart a little bit here with you know, I can't even think of his name right now.
Kalnacki.
Yes, Kalnacki. There we go. Yeah. So, I mean, he's kind of, you know, I guess you could say he was in decent form before Wilder, you know, winning those fights. But at the end of the day, he's not a top tier guy. So you're supposed to, as Anthony Joshua, go out there and take care of business. But, you know, was this his first fight with
second, Derek James.
Okay, with Derek James. Okay. So, I mean, he's still, you know, putting things together, you know what I mean, with Derek James. And, you know, I guess you can use that as an excuse to say, okay, well, he's still, you know, figuring things out with Derek James a little. So we'll you know, we'll give him a little bit of a pass. I mean, he was doing some good things with the jab. You know, he obviously looked a better boxer. He has, you know, obviously more ability, and he's capable of more than what Helenius is, especially at this point in his career. And it's like I said, he's Anthony Joshua. So, you know, it is in comparison. But yes, there's a lot of issues if he wasn't able to get him out of there. And it looked at some points like he was going, like he was struggling. Like he was really kind of struggling. Like you said, like his nose was bleeding and he took some serious, some good jabs. And, you know, there was at times that Helenius looked like he was doing all right. And looked like maybe he can cause some issues later on in the fight if the fight went further. So, yeah. But all in all, the right hand he landed was great. Some of the shots he threw, and some of the jabs and the distance, the range, how he closed the gap, looked pretty solid. So, you know, I don't want to kill him or go much and be too hypercritical, because at the end of the day, he got the knockout. It wasn't early like a lot of people expected or that felt he needed, but he still got it done. So at the end of the day, give him credit for that. And hopefully he just gets better as he goes. And if they do make this fight with Wilder, be one of the biggest fights in a long time in the heavyweight division. So be looking forward to seeing that.
Hopefully we see it. Do you know what, Eddie? I've obviously brought up that statistic about Anthony Joshua being this big, muscly guy, 6'6", big puncher, yet he has gone so long without knocking anyone out in the first six rounds of a fight, which is madness for a heavyweight, in my opinion. And I did a bit more research on it. And do you know, I went through the top 100 active heavyweights in boxing right now, according to BoxRec, the top 100 active heavyweights. Do you know who out of all 100 has gone the longest without knocking anyone out in the first half of a fight? It's not Joshua, but do you know who is number one?
That's a good question. Tyson?
No, not Tyson.
No, not Tyson Fury? Yeah. That's a great question. No, I have no idea. Not at this point.
It's actually Usyk.
Wow.
You wouldn't think so, would you? It's actually Usyk.
But you know what? That fits the profile a bit. I mean, Usyk is not a big heavyweight.
Yeah, but he goes back to his cruiserweight days, though. He wasn't really stopping even then. There.
But he's not. You know what? He's not a knockout guy. See, Usyk is the kind of guy who overwhelms you over the course of a fight. You know what I mean? So that's his game. You know what I mean? That's his game to do that. He wears you down, he beats you down, and eventually you get stopped. That's what it looks like. But yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, Usyk has not knocked anyone out in the first half of a fight since August 2015. In second place, it's a guy called Robert Sims. He's gone back to August 2016. Gerald Washington, Gerald Washington, July 2016. That's the second longest without a first half of the fight knockout. Then it's Robert Sims just a month later, August 2016. And then Joshua, December 2016. So the fourth longest out of 100, to knock someone out in the first half of a fight. I think that's just an insane, insane statistic. You know, I posted it on Twitter earlier this week. I said, does anyone know, out of all the active heavyweights, the top 100, who's gone the longest without a first half of the fight knockout? And no one answered. Well, it was Usyk. That is the answer. So that's crazy. Which has really made me think a hell of a lot about next week's fight, which of course we'll be previewing next week when obviously Usyk gets in with Daniel Dubois. Now I'm convinced there's no way in the world that ends early unless it's Dubois who actually gets to Usyk. Anyway, we'll get to that. Moving on from Anthony Joshua for a moment, moving to the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona, USA. This one was live on ESPN. It was live on Sky Sports. Let's touch on the undercard. Really good win for Emiliano Vargas, now 6-0. He had his opponent Jorge Alvarado down twice in round two. Alvarado now 3-6 with a draw. Obviously quite limited, but he came out with a hell of a lot of aggression. And there seemed to be a little bit of bad blood there between the two men. But yeah, this guy Alvarado came out like a rocket and made it, I felt, you know, quite uncomfortable for Vargas at times when you've got a guy who's not thinking what he's doing. He's just going in reckless. I think it can sometimes work against you if you're in the opposite corner. But I think Vargas a lot of the time would take a step back, catch him with a nice uppercut. I was really, really impressed with Vargas there. Richard Torres Jr., again, I've said it for a long time, one of my most favourite heavyweight prospects in the world. He's now 6-0, a first-round TKO against Willie Jake Jr., who's now 11-4 with two draws. Jake Jr. down once. That's the fourth time he's been knocked out. He's been knocked out in all of his losses, all four of them. But they've all been to, you know, much higher, you know, rated guys than Richard Torres Jr. I think, can't remember now who they were, but he's lost in good company. No one really just at kind of prospect level. Also on the card as well, Lindolfo Delgado moved to 18-0, a unanimous decision there over 10 rounds against Jair Valtierra, who's now 16-3. And the main event, wow, oh wow, we knew it was going to be a fantastic fight. Mexico against Mexico, or should I say Mexico against Mexico, to give it the full respect. I just couldn't see how this wouldn't be a fantastic fight, and it lived up, I think, to my expectations. Emmanuel Navarrete now 38-1, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds against Oscar Valdez, now 31-2. It was for the WBO World Super Featherweight title. Unbelievable fight, this one. Going to go through my thoughts on the fight. Going to start here in round one. Navarrete, for me, nicked that round. Both guys were loading up with big shots. That 1 inch, supposed 1 inch height difference, looked a few inches actually in the ring for Navarrete. Navarrete was getting a bit more on his shots as well, I felt, in round one. I felt that Valdez, you know, was trying his best. But again, I don't think he had as much on his shots in that first round as Navarrete did. But both guys landed. I always felt that Valdez was the smarter fighter of the two, but Navarrete's the volume guy who can just overwhelm you and outwork you. I thought that, you know, before the fight started, it did end up to play a massive part in the fight, I think. Round two, again, both guys throwing bombs, Navarrete at times throwing uppercuts from well out of range, you know, missing. It was a bit crazy, a bit dangerous. And yeah, maybe Valdez nick round two for me. But every time Valdez had success, Navarrete would come straight back at him. Round three, I gave to Navarrete. He hurt Valdez with a shot in that round. It was a right hook followed by a left uppercut. Valdez recovered well. Really good round, though, for Navarrete. I said on last week's show that I felt Navarrete would come on strong late on. And I was thinking, if that is going to happen, then it's going to be a long night for Valdez, because I didn't expect this fast of a start from Navarrete. He came out, looking to work straight away. Round four, Navarrete was missing a lot, but also hitting a lot. He was trying to swarm Valdez. Valdez was using his far superior footwork at times to just box rings around Navarrete. Valdez looking dangerous as well with his hooks at that point. The cleaner of the work was with Valdez, but Navarrete again just being his old self, being relentless. I still think I probably gave it to Navarrete. Round five, I felt, was a really hard round to score. Valdez's face was busted up, but I think he might have just about nicked that round. Navarrete, I felt, needed to be a little bit more cautious. His defense was a little bit non-existent. He was relying on his reflexes, which didn't let him down too much throughout the night, but there wasn't, he had no guard at all. Round six was a Valdez round for me. Navarrete's shots didn't seem to have that snap that they had in earlier rounds. I was starting to think, is Valdez maybe building here? Round seven, though, was a big round for Navarrete. He seemed to have found another gear. Once again, relied on those good reflexes to get himself out of danger. He was switching stances here and there. Valdez was missing a lot with big hooks that he was loading up on. You could see that they were zapping his energy. Round eight, I gave to Navarrete. Round nine, I gave to Valdez. I think Navarrete in that round, I think that was the round where he hurt his right hand. He kept shaking it. He was making it very obvious that something was up with it. He didn't throw it with much conviction at all on the rare occasion that he even threw it. But really interesting for the next few rounds, because I thought this is such a big thing to have happened here for Navarrete. Could barely use the hand. Round 10 for me was probably round of the fight. Navarrete with the early work, Valdez with the late work. Hard round to score. Navarrete, fought pretty much as a one-handed fighter in that 10th round. I think it was a knuckle injury, he'd said in the corner. It was translated by, I think, Bernardo Osuna. Round 11, I gave to Navarrete. Valdez's right eye was basically completely closed by that point as well. It was getting very, very hard to look at. And then round 12, I actually think Navarrete closed the show quite well. I think he won that round. And for me, was a clear winner over the 12. I think it was clear to see it was unanimous. But what a war. It couldn't not have been. These two guys, like I say, are both Mexican warriors through and through. Blood and guts. And for me, fight of the year material. Like I say, I think Valdez is definitely the smarter boxer. Definitely has more skills. Definitely has better feet. But it doesn't always win you a fight. That's just not how it works. Navarrete is kind of just relentless. And what's the word? I'm looking for a word beginning with a B. It's kind of just, I don't know what the word is now, but I can't think of the word. I know it begins with a B. I think the next letter is a R, BR. I can't think what it is. But anyway, he's just relentless, and whatever that word is that I'm trying to think of. Just was able to outwork Valdez. And I will say this, Eddie, I believe I saw a statistic that Navarrete, forget about how many he landed, obviously he outlanded Valdez over the course of the fight, but he threw 600 more punches than Valdez. That is incredible.
600 more?
600 Damn. More. Navarrete on his own threw over 1,000.
What?
Yeah.
Jeez, 1,000 punches in a fight. And I mean, whether you're accurate or not, as a fighter, when you throw 1,000 punches, even if you land 10%, it's a lot of punches to land. So it's incredible to see guys who are busy like that, and just relentless. And you know what? It's kind of what I thought. Now, I didn't think he was going to throw 1,000 punches, but it's kind of what I thought that Errol Spence was going to be bringing the table with Terrence Crawford, which is what made me pick him. Is that kind of relentless, just I'm there in your face all the time, got my hands on you, making you work no matter how good you think you are, I'm here. That's what I was expecting. And I guess I must have been thinking about Navarrete. but yeah, I mean, that it's awesome. You think about 600 punches, just throwing 600 punches by itself is a lot to throw, let alone 600 more punches than another fighter who actually is pretty generous with their offense anyway. So it's just incredible, man. It shows his level of determination and work, and diligence in the gym in order to be able to do those kinds of things in an actual fight where you're being tested and pushed. Takes a lot, man. And you know, you got to respect him for being able to do that. And also winning a fight, obviously. And he hurt his hand and fighting with one hand. You know what I mean? And toward the end of it. So that's pretty awesome. You know, you got to get a guy credit. He won, and he did what he had to do. Good fighter.
Yeah, hell of a fighter. I think that is the 33rd win in a row now for Emmanuel Navarrete. Moving now, though, to the MGM National Harbor in Oxon Hill, Maryland, USA. Over here, another Emmanuel topped the bill. I'm a big fan of him. Emmanuel Rodriguez de Puerto Rico. He now is 22-2, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds for the vacant IBF World Bantamweight title against Melvin Lopez, who's now 29-2. Lopez down 3 times in the 12th and final round, but able to survive. Like I say, Emmanuel Rodriguez, he's just unappreciated and overlooked. I think that's the best way to describe the guy. Really, really smart fighter. And I just don't think he gets much of the credit, to be honest with you. So I'm really happy for him that he's picked up a world title again. That's, I think, got to be his second world title reign. But yeah, he's just a box of tricks. I think he kind of reminds me of like a completely different fighter, but like a Pedraza. Pedraza, I think, is such a high skill fighter that just doesn't seem to get the credit. So yeah, both guys, I think both guys are from Puerto Rico. I just love saying that word, Puerto Rico. But yeah. I'm a big fan of Rodriguez, and I'm happy that he's a champion again. On the undercard, we had him on last week's show. He's knocked someone out again. Gary Antoine Russell, now 17-0, with all 17 by KO. He knocked out the undefeated Kent Cruz, who's now 16-1 with 3 draws. I had, obviously, Gary on last week's show. I said, how confident are you going to be? How confident are you that in a few days' time you're going to have another knockout? You'll be 17-0 with 17 KOs. And he said he's 100% confident. It's just a case of when the knockout's going to come. And he said that someone asked me, I think it was a media guy or whatever, asked him, are you prepared to go 10 rounds? And he said, yes, of course. And he didn't need to go anything like that because he got the knockout in the first round from a body shot. So all the best there to Gary Antoine Russell. Just no one seems to be able to stand up to his power. I cannot wait to see him stepped up. He was talking last week about he'd love the Regis Prograis fight. Oh my goodness, I'd love to see it. On the undercard as well, a undefeated fighter from the States called Travon Marshall, now 8-1. He was 8-0 with 7 KOs, I believe. He got in there with Gabriel Maestra, who was able to pull off the upset when he was about a 4-1 or 5-1 underdog. He's now 6-0 with a draw. I didn't really understand why he was that big of an underdog, because he definitely boxed the better opposition, and I thought, to be honest with you, I've seen him win a fight on the cards that he didn't deserve. So I think if it goes the distance, in the unlikely event it goes the distance, they might give it to Maestra. But anyway, didn't need any judges here, because he got the TKO in round two. He got Marshall hurt, had him down, and then when he got up, he just absolutely swarmed him. So a big upset, a big upset win, I guess, with the bookies. But I actually thought there's a chance it could happen. I don't know if I said that on last week's podcast, but I did put a little bet on Maestra. That was nice to win. Also on that card, Marcus Brown returned to the ring. He's now 25-2, a unanimous decision over 10 there at cruiserweight against Adrian Taylor, now 13-2 with a draw. A knockout win from Jose Benavidez Jr. He's now 28-2 with a draw. That TKO came in round 5 against Sladan Janjanin. It was a body shot, I believe. Janjanin now 36-16. And Jesse Hart, friend of the show, from Philadelphia, 29-3 now. A TKO in just the second round against Elio Trosh, who's now 15 and 11 with two draws. That brings the preview part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former British super welterweight champion. It is, of course, Mr. Troy Williamson. Troy, welcome back on the show, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, mate.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. So, Troy, we last spoke back in October of last year. It was a few weeks before the Josh Kelly fight. If you don't mind, let's go back over that if we can. How do you assess it now, looking back?
Obviously, I fought with my heart. I always give it my all, but I wasn't 100% on the night, and it wasn't a true Troy Williamson performance. That's all I can say, really.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes after you watch a fight, you know, as a fan, you kind of think to yourself, was fighter one just simply that good, or was fighter two just that bad? I have to say, I was very impressed with Josh Kelly. I feel like the fact he did what he did for 12 rounds, he didn't seem to really slow down. I was quite surprised, actually. But again, how do you see it? Do you feel like he was just too good on the night, or do you feel you were just, like I say, not yourself?
No, obviously you can look at it both ways. Obviously, I definitely wasn't myself, but he boxed brilliant, so you can't take that away from him. If I turned up when I was 100%, would I beat him? Who knows? All I can say is that I would definitely give a better account of myself.
And Troy, obviously to get an opportunity like that on terrestrial TV against Josh Kelly, I know you were supremely confident going in. We spoke, I saw a lot of people online that were very confident that you'd go in there and probably stop Kelly mid-rounds. What's the reception been like after that, maybe on social media, maybe from the fans for yourself?
I've got loyal supporters and obviously there's keyboard warriors out there that obviously give you a bit of stick, obviously when you take a little step back like that, but it goes, like you say, just if I hear it goes for one ear and out the other. Don't really take much notice of it on social media, because the people who are writing stuff about me don't know me and I don't know them, so don't really take much notice of it, mate.
And obviously you took 7 months out before returning last month back in Newcastle. You came back with a points decision over a seriously, seriously tough Ramiro Blanco, really tough guy. Were you happy with the bounce back performance, Troy?
Yeah, I was. I won every round, comfortable, and I think I boxed pretty well. I was glad to get the rounds in, because like I said, I had 7 months off. After Kelly fight, I had an elbow surgery, which needed doing. My bad elbow, my elbow was killing me for 4 or 5 years, so I eventually got it sorted, and it was good to just get in there and test it out, land some heavy shots, and most of all, for me jab, so it was good to get the 6 rounds, yeah.
And Troy, obviously, again, you boxed on the same card as Kelly. I don't want to drag it on too much. But again, he got the win over you. He looked really good, very impressive. And then he fights here against, I'm going to give him a bit of credit, an undefeated fighter. No one really knew how good Gabriel Corzo was. But again, a lot of people saying that Kelly looked very flat. It's almost as if sometimes he seems to just blow hot and cold.
Yeah, I watched the fight and... Again, he obviously did what he had to do, but he got the win. He didn't look as good as how he did against me, but he obviously got the win. So you can't turn up at your best and be 100% every single time, even though you should be. And obviously, it would be good if you could, but unfortunately, you can't afford to have an off night in boxing, otherwise you get beat. And I had an off night, I got beat, but yeah, it is what it is. Don't know what to say much, really.
And Troy, getting back onto yourself, what's the plan moving forward? I've seen you have a little bit of back and forth with Kevin Agyako on Twitter. Is that perhaps someone you'd want next?
Yeah, I'd like that next. Obviously, Eddie was calling for that. Obviously, he knows that it makes sense. It's a great fight. To step up for him, which I believe that he hasn't really stepped up yet. And like you say, obviously I've been at that level, took a little setback, and obviously I'm back in the mix. I've come back with a win, so why not fight? You can't just pad your record, your full career, and just fight journeyman, which I believe that's what he's done. So, yeah, obviously it's about time that he steps up, but I don't think he wants it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously I saw the first message you put on Twitter. You know, you said Eddie Hearn says he wants it. Agyarko's coach says he wants it. But you're not too sure about Agyarko wanting it. You said he unfollowed you on all social media as well.
Yeah, he's already rejected an offer, so he obviously doesn't want it. He obviously doesn't feel like he's ready. But when is he going to be ready? Like I said, he can't just be playing German all your career. He's what, 15? No, he's got a title. He's not getting any younger, so why not step up and give yourself a 50-50 fight? I'm not saying that I'm going to go in there and steamroll him. Like, I respect him, he's a good fighter. This is a genuine 50-50 fight, but so obviously it's very unfortunate that a lot of other fighters don't think the same as me and obviously just want to test themselves against the very best. But yeah, he unfollowed me off social media. He used to be one of these little fanboys that, like, everybody knows I go to Costa, I drink coffee, I'm like a coffee connoisseur, like that. Drink coffee every single day. Even one of these that used to get a coffee, get a Costa, and just take a photo of his little Costa cup and tag me in it. Like, he was one of these. He was one of these little fanboys that used to do that, and then all of a sudden he's unfollowed me off Instagram and Twitter.
Wow, that's interesting. Now that we're on the topic of coffee, which coffee shop does the best coffee, Troy?
Well, I don't really go to Costa anymore because the prices are just ridiculously high and they've changed the beans. So I don't really think that the coffee is very strong anymore. I don't mind a Greg's coffee. And I like all these like little small local coffee shops. There's one in Darlington called Echo Free Coffee. It's probably the best coffee that I've had. And I've drank coffee everywhere. Apart from abroad, I think Echo Free Coffee in Darlington and Clarkyard is probably up there with the best coffee I've had.
Wow, there's a plug for them, a little local place in Darlington. That's amazing. Failing a fight with Agyarko, if it doesn't end up happening, which it doesn't look promising from what you're saying here, Troy, what else does the Sourlands have in store for you?
I'm not signed with the Sourlands.
Oh, I thought you was.
Nah, a few people think I'm just because I box on the show twice, but I'm not signed with them.
Right, okay.
Obviously, I see that Mezzy Cartwright fighting for the vacant British title again against that Samuel Antwi. He's amazing, the good kids. Even after we box, we keep in touch on social media sometimes. I follow his stuff and hopefully that he comes through victorious and who knows, I could fight for the British title for the second time and it's obviously against him and it'll be another great fight.
What about, I mean, I would love this fight. If I'm being honest, as a fan, I would love to see you in with Sam Eggington. Is that a fight that interests you?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. I'd love that fight. I've seen a lot of people talk about that fight as well, and a lot of people have even said themselves that they'd love to see that fight. They've both got a very fan-friendly style, and I think it'd make a very interesting fight. Definitely a fight to be a contender, 1,000,000%.
Yeah, I agree, 1,000,000%. I don't think either guy would take a step backwards. And that's the thing, actually. Now, I was just thinking about your fight with Josh Kelly. I remember thinking, wow, you did not stop coming forward at any point in that fight. It was like, wow. So, I'd love to see that one with Eggington, 100% Fight of the Year contender. I wanted to get your reaction to last weekend's Joshua Helenius fight, Troy. A lot of people being very harsh on Anthony. Or maybe in your opinion, they're not being so harsh. He had to adjust to a completely different style of fighter, completely different height. What's your take on it, though?
Yeah, there is that, but I think obviously when it comes to fighting, you've got that sort of level as well. You've got to adjust to things that like that. Obviously, it's happened in the past, so it's not new to him. I think he did what he had to do. He won the fight. For me, he won every round leading up to that knockout, and it was a beautiful setup. You could see him jab to the head, jab to the body, and he set it up beautifully. And once it landed, it was hit with lights out, wasn't it? He wasn't getting back up.
Yeah, it was a perfect shot to finish it. It was definitely a great shot. And a couple weeks ago now, but I want to get your reaction. Crawford, Spence, what a clinic Crawford put on. I know you're a fan of Crawford as well, Troy.
Yeah, big fan of Crawford. I'm also a big fan of Spence. When I seen Crawford box Ricky Burns that night in Scotland, I just, from that day on, I was a big fan, and I didn't see nobody really giving him any troubles. And like you said, Spence was probably the fighter that was going to give him the most troubles, and he just took care of him how he did. It was unbelievable.
It really was a fantastic performance. Just finally, before we let you go, Troy, if you've got any closing words just to the listeners, you can say anything you like. Like I say, obviously, fantastic having you on again. I appreciate at the moment you're not entirely sure what your next step will be. But yeah, good to have you back on again. And yeah, just sign out with a little message if you want, my man.
Yeah, thank you for having me, mate. And I just want to thank all my supporters that have been with me from the beginning. They all know who they are. And all my followers that are just recently following. Could be an interesting second half of my career coming up. I'm just entering my prime now, and I'm ready to get back in there with a big fight. So I'm fully healed, no injuries, and yeah, there's plenty of big fights out there for me. So let's go, baby.
There certainly are plenty of big fights. I cannot wait to see this next chapter of your career, my man. Very exciting stuff. Listen, Troy, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, my man. Thank you for your time, and we'll speak again soon.
Yep, no worries, man. Thank you very much.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. Frank Warren has announced a card to go down on Friday the 15th of September at the York Hall Bethnal Green. It's going to be live on BT Sport. On the card, we're going to see a few decent fights, actually. We're going to see Ellis Zorro, no opponent just yet for him. Willie Hutchinson, back out in action, friend of the show, no opponent just yet for him. Carol Itauma gets in with Dimitro Fedas. A really good fight here that I like. Masood Abdullah, 8-0, gets in with Mark Leach, who's 18-2 with a draw. I think Mark Leach will be a live underdog there. We're going to see Chris Bork back out again. Carl Pfau, Sean Noakes. And a good fight here as well between two undefeated fighters, Joshua Frankham and George Davey. So yeah, that is a card announced there for York Hall. I think that's a very good card actually there for York Hall. Also, we should mention that Matchroom have announced a few dates as well. I think some of these were already known really, but what do we have? Jesse Rodriguez against Sonny Edwards goes down in Glendale, Arizona, December the 16th. Diego Pacheco obviously headlines against Marcelo Caceres in Los Angeles, November 18th. Richardson Hitchens gets in with Jose Zepeda. I think that's going to be a brilliant fight. We're going to try and get Richardson Hitchens on the show in the next few weeks. Jessica McCaskill on that card as well gets in with Sandy Ryan. Austin Ammo Williams gets in with Steve Rolls. That one to go down in Orlando. All of those fights there on September 23rd. And yeah, I think that is about it for the announcements from Matchroom and DAZN. But yeah, moving now to the preview part of the show. Let's start with this card here. It goes down tomorrow at the Estadio Luna Park in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Over here, just one fight to mention. I feel like we have to mention this guy. Gustavo Daniel Lemos. He's 28-0. His last fight was when he stopped Lee Selby. Hasn't boxed since then. Since then, Lee Selby's done more than Gustavo Lemos. He's gone off, managed to get his trainer's license. He's managed to grow his hair in a fantastic little style that he's got going on. And he's now like a trainer with guys training under him, whereas Gustavo Lemos hasn't done anything. But he's back in a 10 rounder against Javier Clavero, who's 30-10 with two draws. All the best there to Lemos. Really impressed me against Lee Selby. Moving now to York Hall Bethnal Green. Again, this one goes down on Friday tomorrow as well. I think this is a really, really good main event, but I'll get to that in a second. On the undercard, Raven Chapman, 6-0. She gets in with Lila Dos Santos Furtado, who's 9-0. I think from Brazil, not a puncher, but I think quite tough. So I'd say that fight will probably go to distance, and I wouldn't be surprised with an upset over 10-2s there. It's for the WBC International Featherweight title. We're going to see Ryan the Piranha Garner, one of the guys who I think has the best nicknames in boxing right now, 13-0. He gets in with Juan Antunes, who's 12-1. That is over 10 rounds at super featherweight for the WBC International vacant title. We're going to see Nathaniel Collins, 12-0, getting in there with Raza Hamza, who's 17-1 with a draw. That one's for the British and Commonwealth featherweight titles. You'd have to favour Nathaniel Collins here. not you know, because he's a skillful guy, good fighter, but not just that. If you go back in their very, very, very recent history, you know, Nathaniel Collins last time out was able to knock out James Beach Jr. and Raza Hamza, his sole defeat, came to James Beach Jr. Both guys boxed him in their last fights. So I think you can probably read into that a little bit there. But the main event, I think, is a brilliant fight. Dennis the Menace McCann, 14-0, gets in with... I hate saying this guy's first name wrong all the time, but I don't know how to pronounce it. Iron Up Baluta. I'm just going to roll with Baluta. It's over 12 rounds at Super Bantamweight. It's for the WBO Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title, which is currently vacant. It's just a brilliant, brilliant fight. I mean, we've seen what Baluta can do. No one has an easy night with him. He's not been stopped. His losses have come to Sebastian Perez, Jefferson Vargas, Michael Conlan and Liam Davies, all on points. Last time out, he was brilliant in a fight of the year contender against Andrew Kane. Beat him, took his O, was able to beat Brad Foster a couple fights before that, was able to beat TJ Doheny, a former unified world champion. Was he unified? He might have just been a single champion, actually, Doheny. Was able to knock out as well David Oliver Joyce. I think this fight will go the distance. I think Baluta has a massive chance here, though. He's only got 3 KOs, so again, he doesn't get stopped and he don't really tend to get a stoppage. But I would say that Baluta to win on points at about 6-1 is an insane price. So, I don't know who I'd favour here, but I think it definitely goes a distance. It's either McCann points or Baluta points, but Baluta is way, way overpriced at 6-1. Moving now to the Utility Arena in Birmingham, West Midlands, United Kingdom. This one here goes down on DAZN on Saturday night. What should we start with here? I don't want to start on a negative note, and I don't want to be too negative, but we're going to start here with Solomon Dacres. It's a 10-rounder here, and I'm a bit annoyed to see it's 10 rounds because I've said so many times I don't really enjoy watching Solomon Dacres fight. I think he is quite boring, especially for a heavyweight. I think you need to be banging people out, especially when you're starting your career. You should be banging people out, to be honest with you. They should be putting him in with guys that he should be knocking over. But anyway, it's over 10 rounds. Gets in with Chris Thompson, who's 12-4 with a draw, been stopped twice, coming off 2 back-to-back losses. He went the distance, though, in his last one against Evgeny Romanov, who most of the time gets a stoppage. So this tells me that the guy is probably somewhat durable. But I don't really know. I haven't seen the guy fight at all, and I don't really want to go and look at him. But Solomon Dacres, man, honestly, like, he loves going points. He's 6-0 with 2 KOs, and he just doesn't do it for me as a heavyweight. What else do we have on this card? Let's move up to the next fight. Good fight here. I think it's a rematch. Jordan Flynn, 9-0, gets in with Kane Baker, who is 19-10 with a draw. If I'm not mistaken, I think that Jordan Flynn beat Kane Baker on points. Yeah, beat him on points over 8 rounds. This one's gone up to a 10-rounder. It was a close fight, though. Only the referee scored it, but it was 77-75, referee Kieran McCann. And yeah, obviously, Jordan Flynn only got 1 KO to his 9 victories. So yeah, Kane Baker's a game fighter as well. So again, you'd have to expect that one to go the distance again. I think Jordan Flynn will probably win that one on points. Cyrus Patterson, 6-0 in a 10-rounder here against Conor Walker, who's 11-2 with a draw. It's good to see Cyrus Patterson out once again. I don't think he gets enough credit. I think he's one of those kind of... like secret gems throughout the Matchroom stable. He doesn't really have a massive following. There's not much people really banging the drum for him, but I think he's a really good fighter. And I think we saw that last time, a brilliant win against Chris Jenkins. But yeah, it's a different fighter here in Conor Walker. Never been stopped. Coming off a loss, though, to Kane Gardner last time out. And then, yeah, he picked up a win against a journeyman before that. And then the fight before that was when he lost to Samuel Antwi. So his last kind of three fights, he's lost 2 of them and they were both meaningful, whereas the win was against pretty much a nobody. So I'm expecting Cyrus Patterson to win this fight. It's just a case of will he get the knockout or will he get the points win? I'm not entirely sure. And then, yeah, the main event, Galal Yafai, 4-0. It is for the WBC International Flyweight title. He gets in with Tommy Frank, who is 15-3 with a draw. Yeah, I think this fight is quite easy to predict. I'd be very surprised if Galao Yafaya doesn't get the stoppage here against Tommy Frank, who of course is coming off a stoppage loss to Jay Harris. They boxed back in May. Jay Harris managed to knock him out in round 10. So I think Galao Yafaya will start fast like he likes to do. He'll be real aggressive, and I think he'll probably try to get Tommy Frank out of there before going anywhere near round 10. So yeah, I think he wins that one and wins it very comfortably. I don't think the quality of opposition on this card is very strong. I don't know if they're calling it a next gen card or not, but to me it looks a bit next gen ish. And then yeah, moving to the final card to mention, it actually goes down next Wednesday, the 23rd of August. So we will be, it's a bit too far ahead in the future, so we're previewing it. By the time we record the show next week, it would have already took place. We will review it. But I just wanted to mention Nikita Su, the brother of Tim Su, the son of Costa Su. He's 6-0. He's back in an 8-rounder here against Jack Brubaker, or Brubaker, who's 17-4 with two draws. Seen his name many times before. The main event, it's probably not the main event, actually. It's probably an undercard fight. I'm not too sure of what the scheduling is. But Liam Wilson, people will know, gave a great account of himself against Navarrete earlier this year, able to drop Navarrete, who we spoke about in part one. He's 11-2. He's back here against the undefeated Carlos Maria Alanis, who's 12-0. That's over 10 rounds there at super featherweight. All the best to Liam Wilson in his ring return. And then that wraps up the show. That is the preview part completed. In part one we did the review part, then we welcomed our special guest Troy Williamson, and then in part two we did the news. Just wrapped up the preview part. Didn't need to come to Eddie for the preview part this week. And the final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in when, Eddie?
In just a few seconds.
Okay, and this wraps up episode 409 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the former super welterweight British champion, Mr. Troy Williamson. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything from myself, though. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again same time next week.